Right, hold on. I've just realised Jen's put the bloody washing machine on because Dusty was sick on our bloody blanket last night while we were asleep. Dickhead. Right, hold on. There we go.
Hello, and welcome to On the Irregular with Java Berry, a podcast where I chat to women from all walks of life about their own unique creative journey, how they got here, how their story has shaped their creative work, what they've learned, what has helped them, and where they plan to go from here. It's an irregular journey for so many of us, and I am delighted to offer a platform to share these fascinating stories and wells of wisdom. This week, I am talking to my dear friend, Emma Crompton, a casting director and acting coach. Emma and I met over 15 years ago at drama school. Since then, Emma has worked with some of the greatest casting directors, producers, and directors in the world on productions such as Line of Duty, Sherlock, Beauty and the Beast, and Vanity Fair. In our chat, we touch on what it's like to be Sacha Baron Cohen in front of Sacha Baron Cohen, the occasional wisdom in giving up on your dreams, and mental health as a deciding factor in her work. A couple of warnings. One, Emma is funny and wise and might make you cry with both of these qualities. Two, this episode contains a healthy sprinkle of expletives throughout. Welcome to episode 11 and my superb friend, Emma Crompton.
Thank you so much for joining me, Emma. It's a joy to talk to you.
It's lovely to be here.
So we know each other from drama school, so I know quite a bit about you already. And then I ended up taking over your job as an agent in an agency in Manchester.
Yeah.
You went on to be a casting director. So I'd really love it if you could just give us a bit of a background about where you're from, your interests as you're growing up, and whether you always knew that you wanted to go into the biz.
So I grew up in Bury, just outside of Manchester. And then I just realised at school, I think it was at school, maybe, but no, it was definitely at primary school, because I remember being hysterical that I didn't get the role of Nancy in Oliver. I mean, I am so far removed from Nancy, but let's be honest, it's like the only female role in Oliver. So that's probably, the competition was stiff. And I remember, I think a girl called Laurie Lee got it. I was like, she didn't even like acting. So, you know, and I was probably about 9 or 10 then. So I must have really wanted to be an actor. I had no idea where it came from. I genuinely do not. Maybe it's because people laughed at me a lot when I was younger, and maybe I just wanted to continue to make people laugh.
Yeah, I've wondered that, because you are naturally very funny. You are one of, like, I remember at drama school, you're one of those people that we'd always say, like, you could literally just walk on stage and people, like, because you've got funny bones. You've got such, and there are very few people like you. Like, it's a rarity. You just have this natural quality that is so, there's just a humour to it. And you are very funny verbally as well. So, and it's so seductive, isn't it, making people laugh?
Oh, I honestly think it's addictive.
Yeah.
It's got me into trouble a lot of times. Because, mainly at school, just because, some people don't understand humour, do they? And they don't, they are threatened by somebody being funny if they're not. And I think it turns into a bit of a power play for some people. For me, I think I probably use it to try and dismiss power, because I don't like hierarchy.
Yeah.
So, and I think teachers do. I don't think some teachers like that at all. But also, I'm not, probably 60% of the time, I'm not in control of when I'm funny. That's what gets me in trouble. And, you know, at drama school, I got told numerous times to stop being funny. I got told when I worked at Apple in a shop that I should stop being funny because some people don't get it. I was like, what? That's, why is that my problem? Why is that my problem? They got shit sense of humour. So yes, it was probably something to do that. And my mum and dad, my family have said I literally was like that as a baby. They said I was either hysterically crying or making people laugh and being a clown. Yeah, which I can imagine was fun to be around.
Did you do drama at school then? Did you choose it as a subject?
Oh yeah. Because at primary school, I knew I wanted to be an actor, and then at high school, you have to do drama, I think, in the first 2 years, and then you choose it as a degree. And I chose it as a degree. That was like my standout degree.
Right.
Like I absolutely loved that. That's what I wanted to be. But I liked anything practical and anything creative. I played football as well, and took all the art classes. Basically, any class I could take that wasn't academic, I took it.
That's interesting. And in some ways, I think often people who enjoy creativity in lots of different areas are often quite attracted to the stage because, in some ways, it kind of encompasses it all. Because there's so many different parts of it. There's the set design, and then there's the costume, and the literary side, and the filmic side of it, which then ties in with love photography. It's such a complete art in some ways.
Yeah, it really is. And I think that's why a lot of people that you speak to in the film and TV industry didn't start off in the role that they had, because I suppose when you're not part of the industry, you see it as you can be an actor, a director, a producer. You don't really understand the thousands of other jobs that are in the film and TV industry and theatre industry. So if you asked a lot of people, most of them started as wanting to be actors or directors, I think. You have to fail at your original dream first and then go, all right, best do something else then, Anna. Yeah, it feels a little bit like that. I think it just continues. I think that's why it's such an industry as well, where it feels, like a secret club, and I think it attracts the cool kids because it's like, it's insider's knowledge, and it's, I think nepotism is right, runs rife.
It's very much an industry and based on who you get on with, really, isn't
Oh my God, that's the only reason I continued to be employed, Java, is because people like talking to me. I think they soon realise I don't know what I'm doing, and then get rid of me. But yeah, if you're a sociable, well, I was just about to say if you're a sociable, likable person, but Christ, I tell you what, there could be more likable people, as we've all been finding out in the news. Yeah, it's a very interesting industry, Java.
And so, okay, so rewinding to drama school. So,
Rewind, rewind.
rewind to drama school. So, you got into drama school, and my memories of you from drama school are you talked a lot about your idols, Victoria Wood and French and Saunders, and that seemed to be very kind of the clear path that you were going down. I mean, what was your experience of drama school? How did you find the whole thing?
Do you know what? It was mad as a box of frogs, which is a phrase I learned from the head of drama school. I really liked it because I got the most out of it, and I was given, I think, two. I really listened to advice, and I really listened to people who've went people's experience and people's life advice. And I remember on the first day walking into drama school on that lovely route past all the wonderful sex workers that we got to know over the 3 years. Absolutely loved it. We were walking in, and the year that had just left, or it was a couple of months in maybe, the year that had just left had been into drama school for some reason. I think they'd probably just gone in to chat to people, and they were walking back, and they said, oh, are you the new lot? And we were like, yeah. And they said, really make sure you enjoy it and appreciate it, they said, because you really take for granted that you get to perform every day. And they went, and we've not performed since we left. And I remember just thinking, God, yeah, this isn't real life. This isn't real life as an actor. And I just really, that really resonated with me. And I just made sure that I enjoyed as much as I could. And also, not surprisingly, there's a lot of drama at drama school, personally, isn't there? With amongst people, when you're working in such close proximity and you're constantly talking about your own emotions and using those emotions to act, and it gets very deep, and these people that you've only known for a couple of weeks know more than you than more about you than some of your best friends and your family do. So it is a very strange connection we all build. But I remember my dad saying, I remember this was it. We'd been in for a week or so, and I'd already, because I'm a good judge of character, I'd already clocked a few people that was like, oh, Jesus, there's something complicated going on here. And, just maybe I'd spotted like manipulative things or narcissistic things about these people. I wouldn't, I knew those phrase, terms then, but I just mean I noticed it was something that I didn't sit easy with me. And my dad said to me, who he is an engineer, he's been an engineer his entire life, but he said that if he didn't grow up in working class Manchester, he probably would have loved to have been an actor.
Oh, really?
And he said to me, he went, don't forget, Emma, he said, some people will have gone to drama school, he said, when they should actually probably be going to therapy. And I was like, oh my God, he's right. He's right. And you know what? I went on a course recently with Stella Adler, not with Stella Adler, she's not alive anymore, but at Stella Adler School. Stella Adler taught acting to like Marlon Brando. She learned from Stanislavski. She was the one of the dons of acting technique. And one of her phrases is, acting is therapeutic, it isn't therapy. And my dad had said it, in 2000 bloody nine. Never heard of Stella Adler, but I just remember thinking, he's right. And what I did was I just separated myself. Even within myself, it was good to know that. It was like, yeah, don't use this as therapy. It's not, it's art, it's creativity. So I really got the most out of it. I really enjoyed it and met some great people, and still use the skills that I learned then now.
That's so interesting what you're saying about the therapy, because I've heard it said a lot often to female writers when they've written something that maybe is semi-autobiographical or something, like, oh, so did you find it therapeutic? And there's something about it that kind of, that to me really, that belittles the craft that has gone into to what's been created. And that's so true with acting. Like, you may be finding, all of your feelings and loving experiencing all the feelings, and you're finding it really therapeutic, but that doesn't mean that what you're doing is any good.
No,
That's, like you said, you've
I
kind of got
agree.
to really, you've got to be able to separate yourself. You've got to be able to use that as a tool, but then still have all of the techniques in place, to be any kind of creative. There's a skill and an art to it. Your wise old dad.
I know, shocking.
Gosh, and so
Never.
had they been supportive of you pursuing acting?
Always. I mean, they still, I mean, God, just even then thinking about it, it's made me realize how lucky I am. They still occasionally try and push me back into it, I think. Not push me, they're not pushy people at all, but are like,
Nudge.
do you not think you'd ever go back to acting? Or, it's, which is, yeah, very lucky, very, very lucky. Especially as my mum doesn't understand it at all, but loves it. I know, yeah, so I was lucky with them supporting me. They never put any pressure on me really to do anything. I think they were just hoping I'd do something. I don't think they could get a gauge of me at all. Not many people did. Probably still don't, to be fair, but I think they were just, because I'm not conventionally intelligent, I think they were just kind of, they just let me be, really.
That's really interesting, isn't it? Because I guess that's expectations, like how you can be
Absolutely.
refined
Yeah,
by
no
expectations.
one had expectations of me. They were like, hopefully she manages to complete school.
And look at you now.
Look at me now, blagged my way through life.
So when you graduated, did you? I mean, because I remember graduating and it just felt like the abyss lay ahead. And I think I was already, by the time we graduated, I was starting to think that maybe I should go into casting, because I'd got a job. I'd done a couple of jobs helping out on the casting for Hunky Dory. I think it ended up being made into a film with Minnie Driver, and it was set in Wales. And I was just kind of like doing, like, kind of assistant. They basically were casting in Manchester. They were doing, nationwide, and they were doing some casting calls in Manchester. And I can't remember who got in touch with me, just said, "Oh, can you help out on this?" And I got on really well with them, and they ended up asking me to go down to London to help out on some casting calls there for Billy Elliot the musical. And I really enjoyed it, and I really loved it, and I felt like I'd just kind of fallen into it. And I remember I didn't go to our graduation because of it, because the job was on the same day
No
as the graduation.
way. I never knew that.
Yeah, and it felt like it was a real decision. It's like, well, do I want to be graduating with a load of people that I actually now really can't stand? By the end of it, I was so done. I was so ready to
Oh
move
my
on.
God, I'm not surprised you were.
Yeah, and then, and I've got, I've kept some really close friends, as you know, but I kind of it got so intense and dramatic and just oversaturated with emotion and drama that I was ready to leave.
And we were all probably fearing leaving. And I think it sent us all a bit insane, didn't it?
Yeah, it's true. It yeah we all were losing our minds with the fear of leaving the
Yeah, and it
country.
was the recession, and we all knew that there was sod all going on, and things were getting cancelled left, right, and centre.
Yes,
It wasn't a great time, really.
it was a terrible time to leave drama school. Awful, and being told, 90% of you aren't going to get a job.
Probably more now.
Oh my God, that's just so.
Yeah, it's probably more now as well, because especially because of COVID. But also, I thought it was probably more before that because of celebrity. I think a lot more people are going into acting because they actually just want to be famous. And I think
Yeah.
that's two different groups of people, really.
Yeah, that's very true. Exactly. So yeah, so did you so it had, did you still kind of have it in your mind, this is what I'm going for?
It's interesting because I do remember in the final year. Well, I remember all the way through drama school being like, I'm not the same as these people. A lot of the men, and I can imagine you definitely felt like that as well. I just the ones that were actors that now I know they're actors, like fundamentally. Not through ability, through mind, that you have to have that tunnel vision of this is what I'm doing, I will only do this. That wasn't me. And I remember two moments. I remember our tutor, acting tutor Helen Parry, saying that she went to be an actor but found out that she liked directing more. And before I went to drama school, the idea of not being an actor, I could not understand why anybody would change if they went out to be an actor. I did have that mindset. But I remember her saying that and thinking, how interesting that she did that she decided during studying. It obviously struck a nerve with me. And then I remember that a couple of the lads were saying that they wouldn't do pantos. And one of the acting tutors was like, you are not going to be that lucky, and you're not going to be that lucky to choose. And also, that is what acting is. You will act anywhere at first, And I was thinking, again, yeah, that's not me. What is it I want? And I became very aware of a casting director and agents, and I'd already started to think, maybe I will do that if this doesn't work out. But that's the difference, I suppose, isn't it? The ones that are still acting, They've never considered doing anything else, ever. And we were considering it at drama school, you know. And I was lucky enough to get an agent, and a good agent in Manchester, and a well-connected agent. And I was getting relatively good auditions. I didn't have loads, but I got a few good ones. And the thought of getting the job filled me with anxiety. Absolute anxiety. I, for various reasons, really, a lot of them were for theatres, and I thought, I don't want to leave my cat for 9 months. And I was like, what are these priorities here? Because they seem to be a little bit off. And people were having to cancel holidays and not go to people's weddings and miss this and that because they had an audition or a job. And I thought, I don't want to do that. I don't want to let my friends and family down. I don't want to miss these things. It doesn't mean everything to me. And I got good feedback. I didn't get any of the jobs, but I just started to realize that I was dreading getting a job in acting. And I was starting to think, probably very deep down somewhere, this isn't right. And I was starting to consider it, starting to think about it and whatnot, and a really funny turn of events. So Jane Hollywood, the agent that we both ended up working for as well, she, after 2 years, she was like, I'm going to not represent you anymore. And I was like, yeah, I've not made you any money. I probably cost you money. I'm not surprised. I was like, thanks for having me for so long. And so then there was a few months where I didn't, the time with Jane was coming to an end, and I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't really give much thought to it. I think I was probably avoiding it. And then, how is this? I went to one of my friends who were, oh, I think she was working at Laureate time or something. She was like, oh, I've got tickets to Manchester International Festival, and it's the world premiere of Victoria Wood's new play. That day we sang, and I was like, oh my God, yeah, let's go. And anyway, we were sat in the stalls, and Emily saw Victoria Wood sat about 10 rows in front of us. And at the interval, she was like, go and speak to her, go and speak to her. And I was like, absolutely not. I'm not going to speak to her. No. And she just pushed me because I'd heard, she's genius, absolutely love her, but she'll tell you what she thinks, and she's not going to pander to people. And I'd heard that, and I thought, oh, I don't want to be some little bloody idiot going over to her being like, I love you. I just thought, no, I've never been that type of person. Anyway, so she shoved me down this aisle, and I'm all of a sudden stood in this bloody aisle in the interval, holding a program, just staring at Victoria Wood, being like, oh my God. And there's this guy stood talking to her, and he looked quirky, let's say, and I don't think she was enjoying his company. And I was just stood there like, oh my God, what do I do? Because I'm now clearly waiting to speak to her, so I can't just walk away. So I was just stood there, and I swear, I don't think she said a bloody word to me, and he walked off, and she just looked at me, and I was like, hello. I was like, hello, I can't quite believe I'm doing this, because I hate this. And well, she was bloody lovely. She
Really?
talked to me for the rest of the interval.
Oh.
She asked me what I thought of it. Was I enjoying it? Is it good? I was like, yeah. Yes, it's good. And then she asked me what I do, and I said that I'm an actor. Lol. I said that I'm an actor, and she was like, don't give up. You cannot give up. Don't give up. I was like, okay. And
Oh.
then I gave up. Because I was like, no, oh, thanks, Victoria, but absolutely not. I'm not carrying on with this. So that was wonderful. And then let me tell you. So I gave up because I was like,
Yeah, because I know that this story then kind of comes full circle.
it very much does. So I end up giving up acting because Jane Hollywood, the agent, asked to meet me with me and says, do you want to come and be an intern, come and work at the office as an agent assistant? And I was like, do you know what? Yeah, go on. It's not what I want to do, but yeah, because I love the industry. I was interested in the entire industry, not just being an actor. And I was just working in a retail shop at the time, so I was like, yeah, go on. It's more of an insight. It's interesting. And God, it was the best thing that ever happened to me, to be fair, because I went to this agency, small agency, coming out the tail end of the recession with actors of all ages, of all different experiences, and every single one of them was struggling to get work. You know, there was people in their 50s and 60s who'd done Brookside for 10 years and they were cleaning houses, and I just thought, I can't do that. I can't do it. And it was just very, and also to see their mindset and to see their drive, and that no matter what, yeah, they'll go and do a play. Then they'll clean until the next play comes along. That was their life. They loved it. Or, you know, maybe they didn't love it, but they had to do it. That wasn't me. So that kind of cemented my decision of not acting, or made the decision for me, thankfully. So I did that for about 2 years, all in all. And it was very interesting. Learned the reality of the business and how just how unfair it is for, not unfair, but like, no one owes you anything. And you're not gonna get anything out of fairness in the TV and film industry.
And in a way, you know, even though every actor does believe that they are special,
Yeah.
nobody is special.
No, there's so many talented people as well. So many talented people. So
Ten a penny.
and it
Which is
just.
incredible that there is so much talent out there, but it is such a cool industry. And I kind of agree with you that even when I have, you know, twangs of like, oh God, I did love performing, I loved acting, and it felt like I was good at it, whatever that means. But like that lasts a split second because I'm so grateful to have worked on the other side and known, nah, I am so just no. I'm so
I
glad that
don't even get that, Java, you know.
really.
No.
That's
No
I would never go on stage ever again, ever, ever, ever. No way. But I can look back wistfully and think, God, I had a good time doing that.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I've thought a lot about it, especially because I've come onto this side now and I speak to actors and work with actors and do acting coaching. It's really made me also look at what I thought of it and how I felt. So it is interesting. But yeah, so agent made me realize it's really difficult. Didn't want to do it, thank God. Then I was like, but agenting isn't really for me. It's a little bit more admin and sales, and I want to be part of the projects. I don't want to be a representative. And I just was like, I want to get into casting, naively. But I remember thinking, right, Emma, you either carry on trying to be an actor for the next 10 years, and God knows what happens. God knows what happens. But let's say you ain't any further along, you've got no money. And then you're having to reassess your life in your early 30s, which, yeah, I know it isn't old. I'm 33 now. Not old, was I? I'm 33 now, but I'm at the stage that I looked ahead and went, what will you do? And I thought, you'll want to get into casting. You'll want to get into casting. And then everybody who decided that this wasn't for them 10 years ago is already 10 years into casting.
God, that was good foresight.
And I thought, you're doing it now because you don't want to be an actor enough. Don't. I was more scared of failing of my dreams, but they're just dreams. I didn't know what I needed. It was what I wanted, but it wasn't good for me. It was not good for me. It gave me anxiety. I felt needy. I felt rejected. It was awful, permanently, and I am at my worst when I feel those things. I think some people thrive off that, but I'm just so uncomfortable when I feel desperate and rejected. I don't thrive off it at all.
It was a recipe for absolute misery for me, and I think it would have broken me in many ways. I think,
Yeah, it was starting to with me because I suffer from depression. So it was not good. It was actually an unhealthy career choice for me to be an actor. So I just was like, right, well, I'm gonna give it a go now then. And I told Jane, she was lovely about it, really understanding. I did a little bit of part, put me in touch with a casting director that actually used to bring me in as an actor, and Janet Hampson, who's now an agent, she swapped around, but
Oh, yeah.
she helped me. I did a little bit of assisting with her on a comedy, which I loved. And then I got an internship for 3 months at the Royal Exchange with Jerry Knight Smith and Polly Gerald. And I was just really enjoying it. And I was like, yeah, this is it. It was far, few, far and few in between. Don't know, sayings or phrases, I always get them mixed up.
Didn't you also assist with Robert?
Ah-ha-ha! Java, this is the next bit of the
Sorry,
story.
I'm getting ahead of myself. Okay.
Getting ahead of yourself. So I then was in, honestly, I can't, right, I was in the office at Jane's on my own, and I have to had as you know, we check her emails, see if anything comes in because she was away or something like that. And Robert Stern, wonderful casting director, who now cast The Crown, Game of Thrones, big stuff like that, basically, Chernobyl. He knew Jane from when she was an actor, so spoke to her, and he sent her an email saying, does she know of any casting rooms that are good in Manchester, because he's coming up to do a couple of projects. So I'd actually been helping people at the time, and so I emailed him and said these are good. And then I thought, well, I should email him and see if I can go and help him or if he needs an assistant or anything. But I was like, oh no, but what if Jane finds out? This is awful. Oh God, maybe that'll be really bad. Maybe that's unprofessional. Oh God. And then I rung my dad, wise old dad again.
Yeah.
I said, Dad, this has happened. What should I do? Shall I email him? And he went, yeah, why not? That's literally all he said. And I was like, oh yeah. He went, he'll either respond or he won't, will he? I was like, oh right. Yeah, again, simple answer. So I emailed Robert and said, please, can I get help? Can I help in any way? Free, whatever, I'll do anything. And emailed back 6 minutes later. I remember it so clearly. And he said, absolutely. He said, I'm going to be up on weekends. I'm working on a Victoria Wood show and another show about Chester Zoo, and I'll let you know. So I then ended up working every weekend with Robert Stern. Oh God, for a couple of months, seeing kids, adults on these two great projects. So I basically got taught how to audition people from Robert, which at the time I didn't realize how incredible that was. I did not realize how lucky I was, how fluky I was. I just thought this was kind of, not normal. I'm not that bloody daft, but I didn't realize how special it was.
Yeah.
And I ended up meeting Victoria Wood and doing a casting session with her, and
And wasn't it for?
it was for, sorry, thank you, yeah, it was for the TV film version of That Day We Sang.
The play that you had been watching when you went, I just.
And it's just so, it was, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. And I was just, and that was probably about a year later, maybe not even that.
Really,
It
since
all, oh, it all went so quickly. Yeah, it
wow.
went so quickly. And then that just led on from one thing to another. As soon as I had Robert's name on my CV, it just, and it works. That's how the TV and film industry works. It's freelance work, it's project based, it's a quick turnaround. So, you're getting a phone call, are you free next week? Are you free on this? Are you free? So it's similar to acting in terms of freelance, but once you get in there, it's, the jobs are a little bit more easy to come by, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
And that was like,
you're now based in London, aren't you? Like that's
because I ended up working for a, similar to what happened, you said, nearly happened, well, happened to you. I was then working for a casting director called Lucy Bevan, who casts, Cruella, Beauty and the Beast, The Dig, things like that. And she was looking for somebody to find a load of kids up north for a Sacha Baron Cohen film. And I ended up doing that for her, and she said, do you want to come and do the last month in the office in London? And that was, what, 6 years ago now. I'd just got that job when we walked up Snowdon.
Oh yeah.
And I
Oh
was,
gosh.
yeah, and I
Yeah.
was remember I was reading the script as we were traveling to Snowdon. And then a few, I ended up in London doing all like loads of the auditions, and before I knew it, I was improvising in front of Sacha Baron Cohen, and then I went to, then he asked me to be in the background of the film, and
Oh,
then
I remember.
so I'd met him loads, and we were looking for another character, and I got sent in to be in another audition with him, and I was having to improvise as Sacha Baron Cohen's new character in front of him, acting with Thomas Turgoose from This Is England. And I had this at working title, major production company in London, and I had this moment, and this was probably 2 years now after I gave up acting. I had this moment where I caught myself in the moment. It was like I came out of my body and just like looked at myself in this room, and I went, "No, do not even think about the magnitude and the mentalness of this right now. Think about it later." You know, and I would never have got to do that if I'd have carried on as an actor.
That's so true. That's so true. That's really interesting that you ended up living your wildest dreams through a totally
But
different
not as
route.
an
I mean,
actor.
not as an
Yeah,
actor, yeah.
yeah. And that's enough for me. I don't, that's the thing. I think acting, being an actor was too much. I like just reading in auditions and reading. I like working with actors. I don't want to be one.
I mean, didn't you take Rebel Wilson to Blackpool?
That was the same film, yeah. So, you know, this film was about Northerners, well, Sacha Baron Cohen's version of Northerners,
Yeah.
and I think I was one of the only Northerners on it, and they asked a couple of us if we'd take Rebel Wilson round the north because she wanted to do research on a character, so I ended up taking her to Blackpool, and it was so funny because she just wanted to do things, so you know I took her to my auntie's salon to get her nails done,
Oh my goodness.
and my poor mum was working at Bury Council, always finishes at 5 p.m. right, always home by 5:30 p.m. So she's really jealous that she's not going to meet Rebel Wilson, understandably. And we're on our way back from Blackpool, and they drop me off in the car. Rebel says, "Oh, Emma, can I come in and use your toilet? It's about 6:30, right?" And I was like, "Oh my God, I can't believe it. My mum's going to meet Rebel Wilson." So I go in the house. It's locked. No one's there. Can't believe it. Rebel Wilson's walking around the house. She's like, "Oh my God, I love this living room. I'm having to do my house up at the moment." And goes to the toilet there for about 10 minutes, leaves. I ring my mum. I said, "Where are you?" She said, "Oh, I stayed at work late." I said, "You never stay at work late." She went, "I know." I said, "Rebel Wilson's just been in your house." She went, "I don't believe it. I'm never staying late at work again." It's a Hollywood star in a bloody house. I know. Yeah, so if anybody goes to Tesco Extra on Bury Road in Tottington, Rebel Wilson has been in there. Yeah, it was very odd.
Oh, brilliant.
Oh no.
Brilliant.
Oh
That's
no.
funny. Gosh, and so what are you working on now? I mean, how's COVID affected everything for you?
It's a funny one, really. For me, because I'd kind of decided to try and get my own casting work as a casting director, so no longer as an associate or an assistant working for a casting director. So I'd kind of decided to do that about 3 or 4 months before COVID hit. So I was already kind of, not doing as much work and doing odd bits and bobs, and I set up an online service where I do one-to-one acting coaching and career advice for actors, because there's not enough career advice out there for actors. So I'd already set that up to kind of take up some time and a little bit of extra money. Basically gone really back to freelancing, which was a bit of a shock. And then COVID happened, so that really did delay how much work I was going to get or going to do. Because it everything stopped, didn't it? Like everything in the world. And then they didn't start filming until, think they were allowed from the end of August
Right, because
to
I'm constantly shocked when I keep on seeing new stuff on TV at the moment.
yeah
I just think, when was this made? How?
yes
It just moves
so
quickly.
it yeah so what is it April, May, June, July? Yeah, they had about 5 months out, I'd say.
Right.
And also, if you think about it, that's just the physical filming.
Yeah.
So things in prep, in pre-production will have been able to carry on just differently and remotely, but things were stopped, halted, and things were pushed, and things were cancelled.
Right.
So there was a comedy show that was about to be commissioned that I worked on that absolutely got binned, you know.
Right.
But the big studio movies and whatnot could carry on. It's probably similar to Recession, isn't it? That it's meant the people that have less funding have stopped. But yeah, there was the knock-on effect then that everything that started in August, last August, already had people attached. So, you know, the work, it feels like even up until now, a lot of the work going on, it already had people attached because there's still that knock-on effect. For lower people like me now, you know, now I'm not with the big casting directors. I've gone down in the ranks really. So all the big casting directors are still getting lots of work and, or some work at least. And
So,
yeah.
up until was it about like a year or so ago, you were still working with bigger casting directors,
Yeah.
and then
Yeah, so I was an associate with, yeah, various casting directors over the years and worked on various TV projects and film projects, which was amazing. But then, you know, I started to reassess because it's a really stressful industry. It's a really stressful job and it is unregulated and people can treat you however they want. And it did. The higher and higher and up I was going, the more I started to go, is this right for me? You know, similar to what I did with acting, is this right for my mind? Is this right? Is this what I want? And yeah, so that's why I also set up that one-to-one service because I was like, what do I love doing? I love working with actors. And the higher and higher up you go in casting, the less you work with actors on a one-to-one basis. So I've started looking into acting coaching and I'm starting to do that and I've got some great clients now and I really, really, really love it. And it's maybe my allegiance to casting is shifting.
Right.
And I would be much more interested in going into acting coaching.
That's really interesting. That's really what I mean, what a complete journey in a way, seeing it from every set, from every angle. Like, I imagine that what you're bringing now to your acting coaching is so incredibly valuable to have had. Not just experiences as an actor of having an agent and having a casting, you know, being cast by somebody, but to have been an actor, been an agent, been a casting director. I mean, that's a triple threat.
I'm a triple threat. I've never been described as that. But yeah, it's good. It's good because there's a practicality, or maybe there's a logistical side to my yeah. But no, practicality to the coaching that I give of I don't be self-indulgent in front of me because I'm not bothered. Is it entertaining? Do millions of people want to watch this? Do thousands? Do hundreds? Do 20 people want to watch this? No, you might be having a good time as an actor, but everybody else is bored shitless. Like, you know, there's so much acting teaching at drama schools that really, really allows people to use it as therapy and allows people to be self-indulgent when it's not helping the actor.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yes, I'm really using the industry side of things of they ain't gonna pick you. They're not gonna pick you if you make certain choices or do certain things or in a certain way. And also to really subtly and to helpfully and supportively give the advice that you might just never get cast.
Yeah.
And it's not that you're not good. There's so many factors in it. There's so many factors it's that you can't control as an actor, and that's what's difficult. It's having that lack of control over what you do. You can understand why the A-list actors become so controlling of their careers and their environment, because they had such so little of it when they started.
Of course,
yeah,
claw back some control and then hold on to your life. That makes sense. Good. I think that's one of the things that I really, really struggled with, was that you kind of, you're at the mercy and you have very little control over your life. And I really disagree with that, with the thing of, you know, don't give up on your dreams. Because I think in the acting industry, it's like, well, I think that that can be a big cloak for a lot of really dangerous, damaging stuff that's
absolutely
happening.
I totally agree. I think, yeah, the don't give up on your dreams and stuff. It's like, well, how do you know your dreams are right for you? You could be wasting your life. You could be, genuinely, I believe a lot of actors are wasting their lives because they're not going on holidays. They're taking jobs that they don't want to do. They're earning no money. And unless that is a thrill to them, it is a, it's just a waste of your life. And I do think the advice of don't give up on your dreams, I agree with you. I don't think it's great. I think if it's, if you can't imagine doing anything else, if this is the place you want to be, if this is, you want to go and work in a bar and struggle and this and that and work loads of jobs in London and have to quit them, and absolutely carry on, because you'll be able to do that until you're 70. And you know, that they want to be actors, but if you struggle with that, then I think you've really got to think about, is that right for you?
Yeah, absolutely. And because I remember one of our tutors at uni saying something like, you've got to have something else. You've got to be thinking about what else can you do other than acting. And I was like, I don't want to do anything else. I just want to be an actor. Whereas I knew deep down that I wasn't going to be able to do it. But yeah, I think if, and I think it takes a very, very, very specific, particular kind of person who can do that, who can handle it. Like you were saying, you know, doing 10 years in a soap and then cleaning, or, you know, dog walking, or doing something totally unrelated. And then, you know, or like in between jobs doing that. But I think it's, I don't know, it's so hard, isn't it? Because you don't want to be discouraging about people doing the thing that they love. But within acting as well, it's so specific, because it's not like you can spend your days painting. It's
no.
You need an audience.
You know. You need other people.
You need a whole project, a whole team.
You genuinely do. And also, I think what's difficult about acting, and why I think so many people carry on, is because you can't quantify it. You can't quantify how good someone is. And I think sometimes, because there's loads of, I don't know, it's a really difficult subject, isn't it? But I think there are also too many people who aren't good enough or aren't interesting enough. You know, I sit in auditions with the best actors in this country and I go, fucking hell, I was not good enough. And I don't know if you allow swearing on this project, Alpha, but that is how I felt. When I saw these drama people coming in, you know, people who've won Olivier's and this and that, I was like, oh my God, that is acting, that is incredible acting. And I know there's a variety, not everybody can just be an Olivier Award winning actor, because there's other jobs, you know, there's loads of jobs in acting. But I think people need to be more realistic about what they can achieve. Everybody thinks they're going to win a BAFTA. Everybody wants to win a BAFTA, but maybe not everybody should win a BAFTA. Why can't you just like have a lovely time being an actor who does local theatre? Or who does kids TV if you're lucky enough, you know? I just think this, everybody having to be the most successful they could possibly be, which is our entire culture, isn't it? Just, it's not helpful.
I think that's the core of it, actually. I think the disease is societal. I think it's a mindset that we have, that we have to be the richest, the most successful, the most beautiful, the most talented, the most everything. And that's just not real or possible.
It's not possible. That's the thing, and it's not helpful. And what if you don't want it? Like, people were really shocked at me just kind of going, not working my way up and not working my way up with these big casting directors and stepping away from it and basically, making myself jobless. And I really battled with that because, yeah, if I had just put a couple more years, if I just did just carry on, if I could just be that, and maybe I'll become a casting director on this and that. And at the time, I don't know what I think at the moment, but at the time I was like, I don't want it. I don't care. I do not want that. It is not making me happy. It's not good for my mental health. But I still had that battle inside me of, but I could be more successful, but I could do this, and I could just do this. But I didn't want to.
Yeah, wow.
Simple.
And it takes a lot of internal strength, I think, to acknowledge that and surrender yourself to it and not allow
It's
yourself,
hard.
to be riddled by,
Yeah.
but I should be, because everything around me is telling me that,
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
you're gonna make it. And I've always found, the idea of making it
Making
really
it.
confusing
Yeah.
statement.
What
Like,
is
what
that?
is making it? What do you
Yeah.
mean, like, but making it being in a happy relationship, having a cat
Yeah.
that you really love, or like,
Yeah.
why does it have to be? It's an unattainable goal. What, being Tom Cruise? But
Yeah.
that's finances and power.
Yeah, exactly. And also, when people do make it, it's not good enough.
No, yeah.
You get there and you go, oh, well,
What now?
all right, okay, we've got used to this. What, do I just carry on like this because I'm getting a bit bored now? Or, oh, this is a bit much actually. And you see it with actors. It's they get a show. Oh my God, I've got a really good show. Okay, right, well, what's the next one? Because you have to, because you need to carry on earning money, don't you? And you need to do all these things, and I think we don't enough just go, is this good for me? I'm trying not to confuse this with privilege of being able to just sack stuff off and just whatever and just float around, because believe me, I'm not in that situation. But I remember I was sat in God, I because the lot didn't have a good experience with somebody I was working for, basically. Very, very bad experience. And I remember I had to go for a checkup with the doctor and this and that, and we were talking about depression, and he said, have you ever thought about coming off them? Because I've been on them for years, antidepressants. And I was like, no, absolutely not. And he was like, why not? And I said, because they allow me to. Because I think we'd been talking that I was struggling with my job and work and stuff. I said, they allow me, to do this and to be in a place where I can handle this. And he went, have you ever just thought about that it might not be good for you or right for you? And maybe you should look after, you should prioritize your mental health and not your job. And I was like, oh, what? I've not thought about that. Prioritize my mind over my job. I was like, that sounds so nice. And I think something really hit me, and I just started to go, do you know what? If I'm happier working in a bar, I'll have to go and work in a bar, because that is how important it is. And I've ended up bloody doing 2 days a week at a woodworking college, and I'm absolutely beside myself with joy. I absolutely love it. So I'm being led basically by my mental health, I think.
That's so that I'm so happy. I'm so happy you said that.
That's good, isn't it?
Yeah, that's really wonderful to hear. And in a way, I really have found that it comes with age, doesn't it? I feel like the amount of pressure that I put on myself in my 20s to be something and to be all these things, I feel like I'm only really just now in the last year, and I'm 37, starting to really, really listen to myself
Yes.
and go, no, that's what I need to listen to. Not
Yeah.
the kind of expectations that I've allowed myself to believe I need to be listening to, but
Yeah.
you know, just be quiet. And
Yeah.
it's so hard because the world is so noisy.
Yeah.
Really hard. That's so wonderful to hear, Emma.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. It's bloody hard work though, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
Really hard work. You know, and I've got waiting to hear about this interview for this major job, and I'm like, you know, I'm you get carried away, and then I go, but is it what I want?
Yeah.
Will it be good for me? Will it help me?
Yeah.
Why is it that I would do that? Why is it that I do that?
Yeah.
And I'm still, you know, having to battle with myself because the glamour and this and that and the status which comes with it is hard to turn down. You know, it's there's something there's a glamour with the film and TV industry that you go, you know immediately someone's going to be impressed that you go, oh, I can cast in. What have you worked on? Lion, Beauty, Sherlock, Beauty and the Beast. You know, people are immediately impressed. So,
You know, it's like everyone loves a story about Rebel Wilson going to Blackpool and
yeah,
that you did.
exactly. You know, and it's exactly, and it's like what? It's hard to throw that away.
Yeah.
Because you get used to it. So, you know, what if I was to leave this industry, that would affect me, and I've had to be really honest about that with myself, that it's nice to impress people, and it's you know, it does, it gives you a sense of status, which I've never had. Never had. And but you know, now I've started to, you know, people will be like, oh my God, it must be wonderful. And I'm like, it's not. It's bloody not. And I've started to be like, oh, okay, right. This is the turning page now. It's like, I am so appreciative and love the stories that I've got from this industry and the experiences. But it a lot of things don't excite me anymore because of the negative things have outweighed a lot of it, really, because people in this industry can act however they want, how however they want, because there is no consequences. The only consequence is being publicly shamed,
Yeah.
and that's what people are doing. You know, one of the bosses I had that, you know, mentioned, I remember thinking, God, there's no one I can go to about this because the producers that have hired them aren't going to sack them.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking the only people I can go to that will be able to give any kind of resolution and I don't know, to do something is the police.
Wow.
Yeah. I remember thinking that's the only, they're the only people I can go to. There's no HR, there's no independent body because the film and TV industry is built up of lots, hundreds and thousands of tiny companies. And those companies are one creative who then, because they got bigger, became a boss and a manager and a CEO. They're not trained. They don't know how to treat people. And if they are not naturally good at it or morally aligned with the good side, it don't go well. And there is, and you know, then the pressures and the stresses that come with this industry, it's just it can be a really horrendous environment. You know, and I'm glad there's been a lot of people speaking out about their experiences on Twitter, but unless anybody comes up with an independent body, it's not going to change. Because there's no consequences.
It's interesting because it feels like it's kind of very, it's coming, a lot of it's coming out of the woodwork at the moment, isn't it? Like people
Yeah.
are being, like you said, publicly shamed, but it's so vast in a way,
Yeah.
you know, how, and into what, and how long will it take for us to also then just become numb to it? Like the fact that, you know, look at politicians. Now there are no consequences. Because even when they've been publicly shamed, because it just is
Yeah,
rife, because it just
I
keeps on
know.
happening. So
I know.
I think it's really interesting, like that you can be really honest with yourself about, okay, what is it that I love about this? You know, what is it has given me? Is it still giving me that? What do I find seductive about it? What do I find comfortable about it? But also, okay, if that isn't working, there is still a huge portion of my life ahead of me.
Yeah,
And,
absolutely.
you know, and maybe I don't want to spend that huge portion. Because you know, if you're lucky, if we're both lucky, we have more life ahead of us than we've already lived.
Yeah.
So.
Exactly. And I think that there's no harm in changing path. There's no harm in doing things. If it not even no harm. I think it's important to do different things. We're not. It's important to get experiences in lots of different areas. It why is it this thing that we've just got to do one thing for our entire lives? I don't get it. Honestly, currently, this is my mind now. I'm either going to be an acting coach or a fine furniture maker. Swear to God,
Amazing.
that is me going forward.
Brilliant.
And it's been over a couple of years that I've been going, what do I do? How do I do this? But I'm like, whatever, why not? The big turning point for me was getting into a relationship because I'd never been in a relationship ever until I was, 30. And I met the loveliest person. And thank God she's not left me yet. And I was going home from this job and I was crying and I was stressed and you couldn't get a word out of me because I was still thinking about all the things I had to do, checking my emails all the time. And I remember this one night after I'd been verbally abused for spelling an actor's name wrong in front of the whole office of about eight people. I just was hysterical on Jen. And I remember in that moment thinking, and we'd only been together probably about a year and a half. I remember thinking, I can't jeopardize losing Jen for a job. And I was like, this, she is way, way, way more important. You know, she never put any pressure on me. She's the most patient, wonderful person. But I thought, I want to enjoy my time with Jen. I don't want to use her as a bloody comfort blanket. And that was the big decision for me. I didn't want to affect her life by me being miserable. So yeah, lots of factors.
Wow, I feel like I've been on a journey with you, Emma.
Good. Hopefully good anyway.
No, it really has. It's been so interesting because we've not seen each other so much over the years. We kind of stay in touch sporadically and, you know, I might bitch about stuff here and there. But, you know, and I've seen your journey from the outside, kind of just like, you know, bits that you've told me. And then when we were working in a similar, you know, the agency briefly together. And it's really interesting to hear your emotional journey, the internal journey that you've gone on, as well as, you know, through what you've done. And it's just it's fascinating. I just love so much, and that's why I'm doing this. I love hearing about how people have arrived at what they're doing and where they're going forwards. And I think yours is just such a perfect example. And about being, and I think so much of it just comes down to being honest and true to yourself and listening to yourself and just knocking off expectations, really.
And trying not to compare yourself. God, it's so hard, isn't it? Especially with social media.
Oh, God,
I know. But yeah, I think it's really important to listen to other people and other people's experiences because even though we're all unique and all individual, there's similar patterns, isn't there? There's patterns of people's behavior and people's experiences and people's mental states that you can learn from other people of how they handled it or what they decided to change. So I'm looking forward to hearing everybody else as well, Java. You never know, I could come on again and I'm going to be a bloody fish handler.
I Emma Crompton round two for Chandler.
So guys, just a little update. I'm now a fish handler.
You can find Emma's coaching work on Instagram at The Casting Feed, on Twitter at Crompton Casting, or on her website, thecastingfeed.com. Thank you so much for listening to On The Irregular. Please make sure you review and subscribe as it helps other listeners find us. It makes such a difference.